A man shorn of his hair and with empty eye sockets walks slowly in circles, chained to the wheel of a grist mill. This day would be like the last day and the day before that. About 40 years earlier, Israel had begun to do what is evil in the eyes of the Lord. And according to Judges chapter 13, the Philistines had begun to oppress the Israelites. And the angel of the Lord appeared to a woman who had been previously barren and gave her both a promise and instructions. We pick up our story in the 13th chapter of Judges and in verse number 5. You will conceive and give birth to a son. And then the instructions. No razor may be used on his head because the boy is to be a Nazarite. A Nazarite, according to Numbers chapter 6, was an individual who had taken a special vow of separation to God, set apart to God from birth. And he will begin the deliverance of Israel from the hands of the Philistines. There's a twofold instruction. The boy is to be a Nazarite. He is to be holy, set apart to God. And then he is also to fulfill God's purpose of beginning the deliverance of Israel from the hands of the Philistines. It is holiness for a purpose, set apart to God for his use. And we believe here at Central Assembly that everyone has a purpose in life. And one of the purposes of this church is to connect people to God, to connect people to each other, and to connect people to their purpose in life. In verse 24 of Judges 13, we read the name of this boy who has been born. It tells us in verse 24 that the woman gave birth to a boy and named him Samson. He grew and the Lord blessed him, and the Spirit of the Lord began to stir in him. Something begins to happen as Samson becomes a teenager and then a young man. Inside of him, the Spirit begins to work to connect him to his purpose in life. And the same way the Spirit of God is at work in your life. Perhaps right now you would say you know exactly what the bullseye of God's purpose for your life is. Or maybe you feel you're at that point in your life where the purposes of God are kind of shifting on you. Or perhaps you're seeking to discern what God's purpose for your life is. But the Spirit is at work in your heart, just like he was in Samson's, to make a deeper connection with God's purpose for your life. And we anticipate at the end of Judges chapter 13, the great things are going to happen in the life of this young man who has been set apart for God's use. But when chapter 14 starts, we find there is another stirring that takes place in Samson's life. Where he's been out and he's been looking at some of the Philistine young women and he's decided one of them looks pretty good. And he has decided to go back to his parents and to ask for a hand in marriage. I don't know that he has actually talked to her yet, but he has seen her and he knows she's the one for him. His parents, I'm not so sure this is a good idea. After all, you should marry within the faith. I mean, isn't there a girl in the youth group that you could be interested in? But Samson absolutely insists, and we read in chapter 14, at the end of verse 3. But Samson said to his father, "Get her for me. She is the right one for me." He has become convinced in his mind that he must have her in his life because otherwise he can't imagine how he could possibly be happy. Have you ever felt the tension in your life between the purposes of God and the feeling that there are certain things and circumstances and perhaps people that we must have in our lives where somehow if we don't get what we want, we might not really end up with a life that we want? And so there are two agendas. There are two stirrings, one of God and one of the Spirit, and the other of his natural impulse to want to be happy, that begin to compete for the attention and the heart of this young man. Now, I'm sure that if Samson was here, he would say, but I want to do what is honorable. I'm going to marry her. He believed there was one person that could really make him happy in life. And he might argue, but I just want to be happy. And so he is going down to visit his girlfriend, who has now become his betrothed. And as he's going down to visit her, he is lost in his thoughts. And, you know, he's probably singing a love song and he's driving a little too fast. He's got the radio cranked. Okay, not the car and the radio maybe. But he's distracted and not paying attention to his surroundings as young men sometimes get. And all of a sudden there is a roar and a flash of fur and a lion springs out of ambush. And at that moment, the Spirit of God comes on him. And in a flash of lightnings, his hands move and he takes the mouth of the man-eater and he begins to rip it apart. He could hear the tearing of flesh and bone and an awesome display of strength. And then flings aside the carcass, this lion. He seems to be unaware of the presence of God, for it's not mentioned in the text. There's no thanksgiving to God for what happened. God has sovereignly intervened in this young man's life who should have been dead and kept him alive for a reason. On another visit to his soon-to-be wife, Samson decides to stop by and to inspect the trophy of his male prowess. After all, he's a young Dr. Hunk. A few weeks ago, my wife made that comment from the pulpit. And, you know, in one moment, I went from being a chunk to a hunk and never lost any weight. So Samson stops by to check out this animal corpse. And one of the things, a Nazarite, not only are they not to cut their hair, but they are not to touch dead bodies. But he's attracted to the activity of the bees within the carcass of this animal. So he gets closer and he reaches in to scoop out what turns out to be something sweet tasting, honey. Perhaps in his mind he begins to think, maybe those rules I was raised with aren't really relevant for life. Because I've drawn something sweet out of the carcass of this animal. Samson was not one to allow the rules to get in the way of his happiness. We get a little bit of the attitude of Samson immediately afterwards, because when he has his big wedding feast and he's invited all of these Philistine friends to come, he turns the experience of touching or reaching into the carcass of that lion into something of a joke or a riddle. And as he's there feasting with his newfound Philistine friends, we're immediately struck, Philistine friends. Samson, don't you know what your purpose is? You were set apart and you were called to bring about the deliverance of Israel from the hands of the Philistines. And you're spending a lot of time in Philistine territory, but not on God's business. See, if anything is going to prevent Samson from fulfilling God's purpose in his life, it won't be his circumstances. And so Samson, after the insistence of his wife, as she pleads with him to give him the answer to the riddle, he, at the end of the wedding feast, worn out by her insistence, finally tells her the answer to the riddle, and she immediately reveals it to the Philistine friends, and they tell it the answer to Samson. In a moment, Samson recognizes how they got the answer, and he's deeply hurt that this woman he believed would bring happiness into his life has betrayed him. And in a moment of anger, he says something. You know, you say things sometimes when you're angry. He says, if you had not plowed with my heifer. Now, that was not a nice way to refer to your wife way now or way back then. And in a heat of anger, he storms off, kills 30 Philistines, deposits their garments, and in a huff goes back to his father's house. And then he decides to calm down from the whole issue and decides to go visit his Philistine wife and shows up at her house with a goat under his arm, ancient version of flowers. He apparently is oblivious to the damage that his anger has done until his father-in-law meets him at the door and says, no, you can't go visit your wife. We thought you were so upset with her that we decided to give her to someone else, but she's got a younger sister, and all of a sudden Samson is enraged. No one's going to tell him who to marry. And in chapter 15 and verse number 3, Samson says this, this time, 15:3, I have a right to get even with the Philistines. He feels like his rights have been violated. And so in anger, his rights being violated, he goes out and he captures 300 foxes, ties their tails together, sets them on fire in the ripening barley fields of the Philistines. Now, I've seen some people do some mean things to cats, but not quite this. When the Philistines begin to inquire as to who did all this damage, they find out who it is, but they don't strike back against Samson. They go looking for his wife, and they burn her and her father to death. Samson says in verse 7 of chapter 15, since you have acted like this, I won't stop until I get my revenge on you. Daniel Block, in his excellent commentary on Judges, suggests an alternative translation for this. That in fact, what Samson is here saying is, I am going to get back at you and then it will stop. As though I can take one more swing at you, then we'll all be even, and then it will all go away. That Samson is operating on the illusion that he's somehow in control. Listen, Samson may be displaying all kinds of power, but he is not in control. He goes out and slays many of the Philistines and then decides to go hide in a cave in amongst the tribe of Judah, only to discover that the Philistines are going to follow after him. And we pick up in verse number 10. The men of Judah ask the Philistines, why have you come to fight us? We have come to take Samson prisoner, they answered, and listen to these words, to do to him as he did to us. Then 3,000 of the men from Judah went down to the cave, and they said to Samson, don't you realize that the Philistines are rulers over us? Why have you done this to us? And he answers, and notice his words, I merely did to them what they did to me. Samson has spent so much time with the Philistines that he has begun to think and talk and act like them. And Samson turns to the men of Judah, concerned that they may actually kill him, and pleads with them, don't kill me. You can tie me up. You can turn me over to the Philistines, but please don't kill me. It's a tragic scene because Samson was called to be a deliverer of Israel. And the very people he's supposed to be delivering, he has to plead with them that they do not take his life. Samson is the only judge in the book of Judges who never leads anyone into battle. He fights. Yes, he fights, but always alone. If your mission is about yourself, it's too small. As Pastor Peterson said a couple of weeks ago in his message, that a seed has to die so it can bear forth fruit. It's not about us. And so the men of Judah agree to Samson's request. And they tie him up, and as he's standing there, these thousands of Philistines are coming towards him. They're shouting all kinds of angry words at their adversary. There alone, it looks like it's all over with, there stands the long-haired warrior of God. When suddenly the Spirit of God comes on him in awesome power, and he snaps off the ropes, and he looks around, and he picks up a donkey's jawbone, and with incredible feats of power and strength, the stuff of legend, he begins to mow down his enemies. As the bodies of the Philistines begin to pile up around him, the rest of the Philistines begin to back off, probably gasping for air because of the physical exertion, and his body splattered with the blood of his enemies. blood dripping off the end of the donkey's jawbone. He lifts his voice in triumph and he declares in verse 16, with a donkey's jawbone, I have made donkeys of them. With a donkey's jawbone, I have killed 1,000 men. I. We have the victory songs of others, of the judges in this book of Judges. For instance, the 5th chapter of Judges, Deborah, in a powerful victory song over the victory over Sisera, and extols the virtues of God and how God had sent the rain and how God had delivered them from the enemy. Because that's what you're supposed to do in a victory song. But here is Samson, this individualist, called to lead God's people, crying out, look at what I have done. And suddenly this invincible warrior feels a moment of weakness. A thirst has built up in his body. As suddenly the Spirit of God has been lifted and the adrenaline rush from the battle has suddenly departed, perhaps nearly sinking to his knees, he suddenly utters a prayer, the first one recorded that Samson prayed. And in his prayer, he says in verse number 18, you have given your servant this great victory. Finally, Samson seems to acknowledge there's someone else around besides him. And then in this short prayer, the very next phrase, he injects a demand. Must I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised? It's as though he's serving God for self. I guess you can do that. Even in this little short prayer, we see juxtaposed the God and the purpose of God and then immediately his own agenda. And when I look at the story of Samson, I'm like confused. Because at one point, on one hand, he's a man who pursues his own agenda because he's got to get what he wants or he's not going to have the life he wants. But in the process of pursuing that, he has ripped apart almost every relationship in his life. He has left disappointed parents behind. He has left a dead first wife behind. The bodies have piled up in the wreckage of his pursuits of his own agenda. And yet, at the other hand, there are moments when this man is so powerfully used of God. When the Spirit of God comes on him and he leads Israel, as verse 20 tells us, he was a judge or leader in Israel for 20 years. When he's doing the purpose of God, sometimes perhaps even in spite of his own choices. But the confusion is not just about Samson's life. It's about your and my life. How we can have these competing agendas. And yes, I want to do God's purpose. You want to do God's purpose in your life. And yet there is this constant voice. There's this insistent demand. You must get things bent your way. You must get, or you're not going to have the life that you really want. And Samson begins to look like a man in whose heart the personal agenda is beginning to win out. He looks like a man whose life is beginning to stumble under the heavy burden of an agenda of happiness. I want to ask him, are you happy now? He is a man who's experienced more success than he has character to handle. And we open the next chapter 16. He is at midnight getting out of the bed of a Philistine prostitute. He had started out his life convinced there was one person out there who would make him happy, was the special one for him. And now he's sleeping with women and he doesn't even know their names. And he gets out of the bed at midnight and he goes to the gate of the city of Gaza, this Philistine city he's been in. And he finds that it's locked. The Philistines, aware of Samson's presence, have decided to wait until the morning light to capture him. And so he grabs a hold of that city gate and he begins to pull with power, and the hinges come off of that gate from the wall, and he carries it 38 miles to the hill of Hebron. Something interesting in the text here, though. It never says the Spirit of the Lord came on him. Although when I read it, I just can't imagine anyone in their ordinary strength accomplishing such an incredible feat. And I think that the author of this text, perhaps, doesn't mention the Spirit coming on Samson because he wants us to experience this from Samson's point of view. Samson has simply become numb to the presence of God. When he pulls the gate off, he must think, I'm just that good. It's an incredible thing that he gets out of the bed of a prostitute and accomplishes something so powerful. Samson is the picture of power without holiness. And it's the reason why, as Pentecostals, we can never be content with only praying for God's power. But we must also say, God, help me to have holiness in my life. Now, I think many people today make the mistake that it seems to me in the text Samson is making about holiness. They think it's a set of rules. And the more the rules you keep, the more holy you are, the better you are than someone else. It's like some of the Pharisees at the time of Jesus. But living a holy life is not a matter of competing or trying to outdo somebody else. How can we compete with the very people whose feet were called to wash? Holiness is about reflecting the character of God in our lives. It's about enabling us to fulfill our God-given purpose. When God created man in the Garden of Eden, he created him to be his image bearer. And when we live holy lives, we reflect the image, the character of God to the world. Because without godliness, we cannot fulfill our God purpose in life. So, while happiness is wonderful, but it comes and goes. And you can chase it like Samson going here and there. Our prayer is, God, help us to fall in love with the pathway you've marked out for us so that we can fulfill your purpose for our lives. Because what you really want in life is a life of significance, a life that matters. And that is only possible when you connect in to God's purpose for creating you in this world. And so Samson is called to be set apart, not just set apart, but set apart for God's use. And we need to connect to God's purpose in our lives and walk in the pathway he's marked out for us so we can fulfill, so you can fulfill God's purpose in your life and live a life that matters. Samson's life continues to spiral out of control. We find him next in the lap of the only woman in the story who has a name. Name is Delilah. It means of the night. A long-haired warrior is exhausted from all of his battles and fighting because he has been fighting and fighting hard. He's got scars probably on his body. And he is beginning to fall asleep in the lap of Delilah as he begins to share from his own heart because he believes that he has found the one woman who's going to finally make him happy. And in that moment of honesty, the player is about to be played. He decides to share everything. In chapter 16 and verse number 17, Samson says this in the lap of Delilah. No razor has ever been used on my head, because I have been a Nazarite set apart to God since birth. As he reflects back on his childhood and remembers his upbringing, Samson knew all along what his purpose was. He knew who he was called to be. He understood God had a purpose for his life, but his own agenda crowded it out. And he tells her everything. And when the Philistines come upon him and he tries to struggle for freedom, he cannot because he's ordinary. It was never you, Samson. It was always the Holy Spirit. And the Philistines gouge out his eyes and they take him and they shackle him to that grinding wheel where a man shorn of his hair with empty eye sockets walks in circles every day like the last with nothing to look at but his past. I started with this because wisdom is to see the end from the beginning. Samson has tried all his life to get the life he wanted, but he did not end up experiencing the life he really wanted. But as this broken warrior goes in circles, something starts to happen. His hair starts to grow back. The hair that has symbolized his Nazarite vow begins to grow back. And the author does not spell this out specifically in the text, but I believe his intention is to let us know that something is changing inside this broken man. But we might wonder, is it too late for Samson? I mean, after all the mistakes, after all the things that he has done, after all of the heartache that he has created. I mean, how could God use him to fulfill his purpose? Let's face the facts, he's blind. How could he defeat the Philistines? And yet, in this story where we see Samson has his own free will, and God allows him to exercise his free will, but God never surrendered his sovereignty. And because God never surrenders his sovereignty, he can always have the last word. And the last word can always be a word of redemption and grace. Jeremiah was struggling because the Babylonians were coming and judgment was coming upon the people of Jerusalem. He belonged to the last generation before that event of the destruction of the city and the temple would take place. He has seen how Israel had gone its own way. And many scholars believe that Samson is, in a way, a picture of Israel. Because just like Samson, Israel had been set apart to live a holy life, to fulfill God's purpose. But they had decided instead to pursue the idols of the nations around them, which the prophets remind us is like spiritual adultery. And so Jeremiah struggles. Is there a future for your people, God? And God says, come with me, Jeremiah. Let's go down to the potter's house. In the 18th chapter of Jeremiah's, Jeremiah watches. He sees the potter take a lump of clay and begin to fashion it into a vessel. But the problem is the clay will not cooperate. It fights the potter's, the master's touch. And so eventually he takes that vessel he's trying to create. He does not throw it away. He returns it to a lump and then fashions it into a different vessel. You see, sometimes it may have reached a point because of the choices that we've made that we can't be the vessel we might have been. But what God in his grace as a sovereign master's hands of a potter can recreate you into a different vessel. Not inferior. A different vessel that he can use for his purpose. In Hebrews chapter 11, we find a chapter that describes the great men and women of faith. And nestled into that chapter, we find the name of Samson. And when I read the name Samson there, and all these great men of faith, and Abraham and Moses, and there's Samson. I want to say, but wait a minute. I know the whole story. I know what he did in the Old Testament. We've been talking about it this morning here in this message. How can his name be found in Hebrews 11? You see, when God's grace is finished with our lives, and he has washed away our sin, all that is left is the moments we got it right. That's the point of grace. The one thing that Samson seems to have gotten right was there were times when he acted in faith, when the Spirit of God came on him. And that's the one thing that he is remembered for in the New Testament. Because before you get to Hebrews 11, in the 10th chapter, in the 17th verse, we are told, their sins and lawless acts I will remember no more. That he chooses to wash away and to cleanse us. And it's for that reason in Hebrews 10, it goes on to say that we can with confidence enter into them, the Holy of Holies, because our hearts have been sprinkled by the blood of Christ. We don't have to slink about like second-rate Christians because we know that our lives have been changed, have been transformed, have been washed. Our sins have been washed by the grace of God. The problem is that for all of our talk and sing about grace, we sometimes don't really see ourselves that way. For we see ourselves for what we've done. We remember the scenes of our past. And the enemy helps us by bringing them back into our memories so that we feel God couldn't possibly use us in our present condition. And yet God chooses to remember your sin no more. What you need to do is to see yourself the way God sees you, because that's who you really are in him. And the power of grace is when we get a hold of seeing ourselves the way that God sees us. At the end of Samson's life, Samson is brought out before the Philistines in their temple so that they might have sport with him. He's going to put on in their minds some kind of performance. They can mock the fallen man of God so they can mock the God he represents. And as he's out there in the temple, he feels for the pillars and he raises up those empty eye sockets. He had to lose his eyes so he could see. And he cries out, "Oh Lord, one more time. Stand to our feet this morning. As the altar workers come forward. This morning you're struggling with two agendas. You want to do God's purpose and fulfill his purpose. You want to live a life that is meaningful and significant. But there is the agenda of self. The agenda that says that unless you can have what you want, you can't have the happiness you so desperately desire. And this morning, I call upon you to submit your life to God, to recognize that no matter how far you seem to have gone the wrong way, his grace is always the last word. To see yourself as God sees you and to say, I want to live from this day forward the pathway that you've marked out for me, God. I want to be set apart for a purpose. Your purpose, and I want to fulfill that in my life. As we begin to sing this morning, if you want to come forward to pray with one of our altar workers, or perhaps you simply want to come and pray, find a place of prayer down on these steps, and in a moment we'll dismiss, but let's be patient for those, first of all, who want to come forward to seek the face of God. God bless you as you come.